You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Kuh, and I am joined by my co-host, Patrick Fitzgerald. In this episode, we're going to go over the latest news and notes around baseball, recap the hitter and pitcher performances from this past week, and, of course, provide some streamer recommendations at the end of the show. But before we get into all of that, Patrick, how are you doing?
Hey, John, I'm doing pretty well. Orioles just finished taking 2 out of 3 from the Mariners, so nice to see, you know, that they can still hang with some playoff teams, even if they're basically completely out of the picture. Of course, they did not even score a run in the game I went to in the series. They lost 1-0, got shut out by George Kirby in the Mariners bullpen. So bad timing on my part, I guess. But what are you going to do? How are you?
I'm doing all right. I guess if you've been following baseball news, you know that the Twins decided to take themselves off the market, which every Twins fan was a big fan of that move. So, yeah, trying to navigate the doom and gloom in Twins territory. But actually, similar to you, I went to a game last Saturday in our series against Kansas City, and I also went to the one loss, which I think was a 1-0 game. Noah Cameron had a great outing, and, yeah, the Twins just could not do anything in that one offensive-wise.
Yeah, it's a real shame with the ownership thing. You know, they dump payroll at the deadline, and you're like, all right, I'm okay with that. It stinks, but as long as they sell and we can move on, and then they say they're not selling, and it's just not really sure what the path forward is, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a heck of a rug pull. We're trying to maintain some positivity. You know, maybe they do actually want to win, but yeah, I won't get into too much of the specifics there. But needless to say, it is very frustrating as a Twins fan to kind of realize this might be our future for the next few years of dealing with, you know, a bottom five payroll in baseball, and frankly, a team that probably will also finish in the bottom five in most years now. So,
yeah, good core, but you got to build around them.
Exactly, and the core needs to also be good too. That's the other problem. So, all right. Anyways, before we get into the rest of the podcast, just a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. You can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at ThisWeekPLpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to. Again, we're on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. Wherever you listen, make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. All right, we are going to start, as always, with injury list news. And there's actually quite a bit of news. A lot of players actually coming back that are kind of important for fantasy reasons. And a lot of players that are going on the injured list that you might need to be aware about for fantasy reasons. But we are going to start off in Texas with Adolis Garcia, who is dealing with a left ankle sprain. He got put on the injured list. O'Neill Cruz yesterday, or Wednesday, I should say, suffered a concussion running into a teammate. He is out. That's a 7-day IL, but of course, that timetable could increase depending on the severity of the concussion. Taylor Walls of the Rays going on the injured list with a left groin sprain, strain. Amed Rosario, new Yankee, is all of a sudden going on the injured list with the left SC joint sprain. The SC joint is, I guess, something related to your clavicle, so there might be some issue with the area around his shoulder. Luis Severino going on the injured list for a left oblique strain. A couple Baltimore Orioles. Tyler O'Neill going on the list with right wrist inflammation. Kowser is going on the 7-day IL with a concussion. Logan Henderson of the Brewers going on the injured list with right elbow inflammation. This is a little bit convenient because Mizorowski is coming back to pitch, I believe, today, Thursday, or maybe it's tomorrow, Friday. So it's a little bit of roster shuffling for the Brewers, I think, a little bit there. Miguel Amaya, really sucks to see this one. He came back from the 60-day IL and then immediately sprained his ankle. It did not look good, but unfortunately, he is now back on the injured list. Josh Hader, this one's kind of huge. Left shoulder strain. The Astros don't expect him to return in the minimum 15-day span for the injured list. They're kind of expecting a longer recovery. So this is definitely going to impact saves leagues. Saves hold leagues, probably not that much impact because you'll likely already have some of the setup guys in Houston. But at least in saves leagues, it's going to be a big deal with Josh Hader hitting the injured list. And then Michael King, unfortunately, just after Coming off the injury list, pitching two innings, four hits, two earned runs, one strikeout, and two walks in his return. He is now going on the injury list with left knee inflammation, which is a different injury than what he was on the injury list before. So just kind of an unfortunate turn of events for Michael King there.
Yeah, got to be incredibly frustrating for, you know, King owners and obviously the Padres too. He comes back with that abbreviated outing and that's all you get. It's really tough. Hader, obviously a huge blow, big ramifications in saves leagues. It does seem like, though, we were talking about this in the Discord the other day, you know, Brian Abreu is kind of the only high leverage right-handed reliever in Houston's bullpen. Like, their second best righty reliever is Caleb Ort, who you've probably never heard of, or Eniel De Los Santos, right, who's kind of been a journeyman. So they have three, like, high-leverage lefties, so it wouldn't be surprising to see them mix and match saves a little bit. So Abreu has gotten a save, and I think he'll get most of the saves, but probably not all of them. And, yeah, the Orioles with his outfield injuries, we are running out in outfield right now where in 2 years we're going to look back and be like, oh, yeah, those guys were on the Orioles. You know, we got Ryan Noda out there. We got Greg Allen out there, Dylan Carlson. It's ugly.
Is it is Heston Kjerstad just hanging out in AAA? Or they're not doing anything with him?
Yeah, he was awful after they sent him down, and then they put him on the IL with fatigue. I don't know. It sounds like he might be having some health issues. I'm not really sure. They've kind of been a little coy about it, which, you know, if it's a health thing, I guess I get it. He also had myocarditis right after he got drafted from COVID. So
okay.
He, you know, has some health issues. So maybe it's related to that. But yeah, it's kind of a lost season for him, unfortunately. But maybe we'll see Dylan Beaver soon.
Yeah, I mean, one could hope, I guess. all right. In terms of some returns from the injury list, some pretty big stuff here. Hunter Green returns with six innings, three hits, zero runs, six strikeouts, and no walks in his start on Wednesday. We'll talk about that a little bit more later in the pod. Evan Carter back from the injury list. He got two hits in his return on Wednesday. Paul Blackburn of the Mets got called from the injury list. Five innings, one hit, two run, three strikeouts, and one walk. Sir Gibson Long of the Tigers got called up, two innings, one hit, no one runs, two strikeouts, and zero walks, but then just got optioned to AAA, so unfortunately he's not really going to be an option for most fantasy teams right now. Martin Perez of the White Sox came back, 3.1 innings, three hits, one run, two walks, and four strikeouts in his return. Andres Jimenez of the Blue Jays got back and has played in both games since returning from the injured list. Javier Assad of the Cubs went four innings, eight hits, four runs, two strikeouts, and one walk. He gets another start on Sunday against Pittsburgh, I believe, which could be a very weird streaming situation if you believe in Javier Assad. Byron Buxton of the Twins came back on Monday, hit a homer. And he hit a homer in his first at-bat. It was his second at-bat against the Yankees. Christian Javier of the Astros, five innings, three hits, two runs, five strikeouts, and two walks. He's going to be a very interesting player, and we're going to talk about him later in the podcast as well. Ryan Mountcastle, the Orioles, he's back. He's had two homers in five games so far, so it doesn't look like he's missed a step at all in his return from the injury list. And Dylan Cruz, finally back from his oblique strain. He was on the 60-day IL for that. His value really comes in speed. He really has not been able to show too much power, unfortunately, in his kind of brief appearance in the majors. And I don't really know if he's really worth a pickup, and maybe unless it's like a really deep league or an AL only league. But, you know, still worth keeping an eye on him because obviously of the prospect pedigree there with Cruz.
Yeah, I think he's worth a pickup, you know, and maybe stash on your bench just because of the power speed upside. I think that has appeal in most formats. Obviously, the Nats offense has been struggling, you know, a good bit, so you got to keep that in mind. And then, yeah, Hunter Green, super sharp in his first start back. Love to see that. Evan Carter should have a nice runway to playing time with the Adelis Garcia injury. And then Andres Jimenez looks like he might sit against a couple lefties, but the real kind of playing time loser there is Joey Loperfido. He's kind of going back to the bench a good amount. And George Springer, who, you know, we'll mention in a bit, is on the way back. So, you know, things are getting pretty crowded in Toronto because Dalton Varsho's back and hitting. Ernie Clement's been hitting. So it's an interesting kind of playing time situation there.
Yeah, and then obviously for Jimenez, it's kind of weird because, you know, he was signed to kind of be the second baseman, not of the future because, I mean, he's, you know, late 20s at this point, but was supposed to be, you know, the starting second baseman, but because of kind of the wealth of bats that the Blue Jays have, you know, they're kind of able to shift guys around and still not suffer too much in terms of offense.
Yeah, you figure that, you know, you just hope Jimenez is close to a league average bat, but he's really struggled this year, so he's you know, getting buried in the lineup for sure.
Yeah. Well, some other injury updates. Tyler Estrada of the Rockies got transferred to the 60-day IL, which basically means he's done for the year. I guess there's an outside... Actually, no. There really is no outside shot that he could be returning this season. I think that's pretty much done for the year for him. Max Muncy of the Dodgers, currently day-to-day with soreness in his right side. Of course, by the time this pod comes out, it might be a moot point, but just something to keep track of if he is still dealing with that. Ronald Acuna Jr., Atlanta is saying that he could return over the weekend. Obviously, has not been necessarily designated for returning, but that's just something to keep an eye out if you have him on your team. Austin Riley, on the other hand, does not look like he's going to be returning immediately from his injury. Still could be basically another week or so after his 10-day stint on the IL has finished before he returns from the injury list. George Springer could be activated this weekend. He is starting a rehab assignment in AAA, but Toronto's kind of indicated that it's only going to be 1 to 2 games, and so he could be back pretty soon, as early as this weekend. Wyatt Langford of the Rangers, currently day-to-day with forearm stiffness. Felix Bautista of the Orioles, he's out for season. The Baltimore called it a significant shoulder injury, but didn't really say more than that, which is a little nervous for a guy who is an all-star level closer, but yeah, kind of unfortunate news there. His teammate Zach Eflin is also just now out for season after undergoing back surgery. I think the reports there, it's going to be a 4 to 8 month return for him, so he might not even be ready by the time spring training rolls around. Aaron Nola is slated to come back to the team on Sunday and start. And Landon Roop, he got up to 50 pitches in his most recent minor league rehab start. He is going to start on Friday. Of course, we're recording this on Thursday. So by the time this episode comes out, you'll probably know how well Roop did and if he's worth picking up. Bryce Miller got up to 76 pitches in his most recent rehab start, which was Thursday. Probably one more before he returns, but we could see Seattle probably activate him if they're okay with him, you know, going, let's just say, 80-some pitches and 4 to 5 innings, maybe. Chris Sale got to 40 pitches in his most recent rehab start. He is going to make a second one on Sunday. I would not be surprised if that's his last one, if he's just raring to come back to the majors. And then finally, Jameson Taillon of the Cubs, 84 pitches on Wednesday in his most recent rehab start. I would say there's not really a logjam in Chicago right now, but you know, they've got Javier Assai, which we just mentioned, who just came back from the injury list. Colin Rea has been pitching as well. It could be debatable whether they go to a six-man rotation or if they try to move one of those guys to the bullpen. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting decision for what the Cubs end up doing when Taillon is healthy to come back.
Yeah, I think Assai is probably going to be the odd man out, but hard to say. They also have 8 games next week. They're playing a doubleheader against the Brewers and then have a full slate. So they might just, you know, they're going to be using a 6-man for a little bit. So we're not going to get an answer on that quite yet. And then, yeah, Chris Sale, I agree. I think 1, maybe 2 more rehab starts, he'll be back. You know, he wants to be back on the mound. Hoping for the best with Bautista, you know, definitely concerning. And then Wyatt Langford, just kind of an injury riddled campaign. You know, he's a guy who was super highly drafted and, you know, has had some power speed flashes. But I think all in all, you're probably pretty disappointed with him based on what you spent.
Yeah, I mean, him. Evan Carter probably, you know, not as highly drafted, but also, you know, similar in the vein of hype. And both those guys have been kind of disappointing. Langford probably more so, just because of how high he was getting drafted. But yeah, some of it is no fault of his own, right? Just the injuries have been coming here and there. But even when he's been healthy, the bat just hasn't necessarily been popping as maybe a lot of people were expecting it to.
Yeah, a lot of underperformance across the Rangers' entire offense. And I think that we've seen this year that Globe Life Park has been like one of the best pitchers parks in the league this year, which hasn't always, I don't think, been the case in years past. So definitely something, you know, to factor in the future for your drafting.
Yeah, it's definitely been more of a neutral sort of park, right? maybe like trending a little bit to pitchers, but not the worst park for pitchers, right? So or for hitters, I should say. So maybe some of that is because of the stats are skewed by how bad the Rangers are in terms of their offense. I mean, obviously they fired their hitting coach 1 month into the season and it really has not improved for them since. But it also is, yeah, it is interesting that like it's kind of affecting both the old and the young players on the team, right? Marcus Semien's not doing super well, but also Langford's not doing super well when healthy. So yeah, it's kind of a weird situation there. Also, their pitching is just so good. Like, you feel bad for Jacob deGrom. Like he's finally healthy. He finally has a good season, and his offense still can't carry him to get some wins.
Follows him everywhere he goes.
Exactly. All right, well, that wraps it up for all of the injury news, and hopefully we get some good news from some of these players next week. But we are going to dive into player performances starting on Friday. Who do we got in terms of the bats?
Yeah, so on Friday the 8th, Justin Havelock was on our hitter recap, which was Heriberto Aparent, which is, of course, about Heriberto Hernandez of the Marlins. We had a lot of guys on this day who were kind of more under the radar, fringe, fantasy relevant guys who had good games. So I picked out Hernandez as one of those guys to profile. He went 2-for-4 at the home run, 2 runs and 2 RBI. And it was a 7th homer of his young major league career. Brought his slash line up to 311, 370, 533. It's fallen off a little bit since last week, currently at 288, 342, 489. And he's also, you know, had success against pitchers of both handedness, 106 WRC plus against lefties, and actually better against righties, even though he's a righty at a 148 WRC plus. Overall, the high BABIP, it's about 380, and then also striking out 35% of the time against lefties, 29% overall. You know, hint that there could be some problems down the line, but maybe, you know, some room for optimism that he can succeed despite. We do expect some regression in the batting average department, but the Marlins kind of have a sneaky, fun offense. Hernandez has been in the lineup for the last 5 games at the time we're recording this, playing between right field and DH. So this is actually his first time being in the big leagues after spending a long time in the minors as an international guy. Do we think he's, you know, worth having on the bench as an outfield depth option? Do we think he could be a nice bat down the stretch, or are we kind of just leaving him out on the wire?
I think if in a 15-team NL only league, he's worth a flyer. The reality is that he's still batting kind of the back half of the lineup in the Marlins, which just, even as fun as this Marlins lineup has been, and we're going to talk about one of the other players in that lineup later in the pod. I don't know. This doesn't necessarily strike a lot of confidence in me. Like, Augustin Ramirez is maybe like the one name that most people know. Kyle Stowers obviously has had a very good season this year. But beyond those two guys, like, it's hard to find a lot of things that you like about this offense. So, I mean, if he keeps hitting homers, then obviously, yeah, you want him on your team. But I just think there's some regression with that average. Like you said, like where it was just a week ago was 311. Now it's down to 288, right? And so I would not be surprised if that continues to go down. This is a player who's had plus 30% strikeout rates in the minors. And right now he's at 29% in the majors. So I would expect some regression to his mean. And you know, that average kind of goes down, which kind of means all the other stats kind of go down.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, unfortunately. It has been a nice start, but the contact is pretty scary. His swing strike rate is almost 19%, which is one of the worst in the league, so it probably hints at even a higher strikeout rate. And then, like, on his player page, obviously small sample, but, like, he's all the contact metrics, you know, whether it's contact rate, whiff, or, you know, out of or zone contact rate, you know, whenever he's swinging, he's really just having a tough time making contact. So it's good that he's doing damage. And he does have like a long track record of good minor league performance, but it's mostly below AAA. He's kind of just been an average hitter at AAA. So I kind of agree. I don't think, unfortunately, that there's much more in the tank here, and this might just be a hot month.
He does pull the ball like crazy though, 49%. So he is taking full advantage of trying to get pull power. It's working out for him right now, but I would not be surprised to see that number also kind of go down as pitchers get maybe more acclimated to throwing to him or something like that.
Yeah, even like his rolling X WOBA chart just kind of shows like a steep, you know, steep dive the last couple of weeks. So seems like they're probably, you know, making an adjustment. Pitchers are.
Yeah.
So speaking of pitchers, on the pitching side, Uber prospect Chase Burns will be who I'm talking about. Seth Lugo was the SP roundup cover boy. Is on a really rough stretch right now, but I'm talking about Chase Burns, who went at the Pirates. Great matchup. Unfortunately, only got a no decision, even though he went 6 innings, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts, 16 whiffs, and a 32% CSW on 97 pitches. So not counting the suspended Speedway Classic game, that's 4 straight games with 10 strikeouts for Burns. Just completely, you know, flashing that upside and that, you know, that he's a super potent power pitcher. He had great command of lefties and righties in this one. Textbook Blake Snell blueprint approach. So 4-seamers up, sliders down. And yeah, I mean, this was just a super impressive outing where Burns dominated with 2 pitches. But then this week we, you know, hear that he's going to be on an innings limit, and it doesn't even seem like he will get a start this week. Nick Martinez was put back in the rotation. Hunter Green is back. So it's kind of a fantasy headache at this point, unfortunately, just as Burns look to be turning it around. They're monitoring his innings. So how are we kind of treating this in our more shallower leagues? Are we just holding on to see how he's used and then make a decision?
I think I would lean that way. I think the skills are just too good to drop him. You know, maybe they skip a start, but you know, you hopefully you have a deep enough bench that you can weather not having one start. I just think with how good he is, it doesn't make sense to send him down to the minors, or sorry, to drop him from your team unless you know that he's just like, yeah, he's not going to be pitching more than like 3 to 4 innings a game or something like that. Kind of in a similar vein, which has been really frustrating to me, was how the Rays have handled Drew Rasmussen. Like a couple starts back, they're like, oh, we're, you know, well, I mean, for the entirety of July, they were being stupid weird with him. And then it was kind of unclear whether he'd be going deep. And then for the last few starts, he's had absolute gems, two quality starts. But because I dropped him a couple weeks ago, I haven't had the opportunity to recoup those. So I think, yeah, I think in the case of Chase Burns, at least, I would just wait. The skills are too good. There's no reason to, like, kind of rage drop him unless you absolutely have to. And even then, if it's like, you know, one start a week of like 5 innings where he's still able to, you know, potentially get a win there or something like that, or at least something useful, I think it's worth having him on your roster.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think we need to see how he's used first. You know, don't want to make a rash decision that we'll regret. It would be great if he's using like a follower type role, like maybe they piggyback him and Nick Martinez or something like that. That would give him like good wins chances, and you know, he'd still be able to work like maybe 4 innings or so per outing. I do think quality starts leagues, I don't know if I'll have another quality start the rest of the year, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think that makes him a drop in those formats necessarily, but it makes him like one of the guys you might want to consider dropping if you have an enticing add to make. But yeah, the skills are incredible, like you said. 15 strikeouts per 9, 5.24 ERA, and the 1.34 whip don't really tell the story of how good he's been. Obviously, he's going to give up some hard contact because of the 2-pitch approach, but yeah, he has pretty overpowering stuff, so it's always going to come with a ton of strikeouts. So I think you can just wait and see how it goes for a little bit, and then, yeah, if they're using him like 2-3 inning stints, I think that's the point you consider dropping him, but anything more than that, I think he's still viable.
Yeah, and I think the team will probably be pretty clear about how they're planning to use him. Like you mentioned, with Hunter Green back, you know, they do have to make a decision on their roster about what they do with their pitchers. But I think they'll probably make it clear what their expectation is for him. And I think you can make a decision based on that news once that comes out.
Yeah, and the Lodolo IL stint definitely buys a little more time. But when he comes back, it might just be too crowded for him to have a spot. So we'll see.
Yeah. All right, moving on to Saturday. Thanks to Kevin O'Brien for a day at the KFS. A hitter recap article referring to CJ Capus, who hit his first major league homer on Saturday. So congrats to him. But we're going to talk about a different slugger, Marcell Ozuna of Atlanta, 2-for-4 with 2 homers, 2 runs, and 4 RBI. It was pretty surprising that Ozuna stayed in Atlanta over the trade deadline. And since that point, he's been really, really solid of a baseball player. He sat out the first game of the doubleheader on this game, of this day, they were facing Miami. But in the second game, of course, he had all these stats that we just talked about. He has a 963 OPS since the All-Star break. That's only 18 games, so still a relatively small sample size compared to the rest of the season. But yeah, he's been pretty much playing at an all-star level for, you know, the last 3-ish weeks. Atlanta is pretty much all but eliminated from the postseason, so they don't really have a ton to play for. But they are still trotting out Ozuna and, you know, all their stars. They're, you know, still trying to win games. And there's still plenty of time for Ozuna to reach that 30 homer mark for the third straight season. I don't think he's gonna, you know, touch 40. I don't think he's that close, but you know, maybe he gets to 35 if he goes on a really nice pace. He's also one of those interesting players who, even though he just DHs all the time, he has outfield eligibility in Yahoo, which makes him, you know, very interesting sort of player to have on your roster. Any thoughts on Ozuna in just terms of his rest of season value? Is he still worth keeping on a team, you know, even if he's DH only, in those leagues like ESPN or CBS formats where he doesn't have that outfield eligibility?
Yeah, I think he's worth keeping while he's going well. I feel like this season for Marcell Ozuna is like I'm getting punished by the fantasy guys because I have him in a Yahoo league and I acquired him. It was a keeper league and I acquired him at a good keepable price specifically because he had outfield eligibility, even though he shouldn't. And it wasn't being factored into the projections. And then he just stunk for the first like you know, he was good for the first month and then just stunk for like 3 months. So pretty infuriating, but he's obviously going really well right now. And Atlanta seemed committed to playing him more regularly. Sean Murphy, I think, has been in a pretty big slump, so they're okay with benching him. So I think while he's going good, you just ride it out. Atlanta is kind of like a mid-tier offense, nothing great like we've seen in years past, but not terrible. So yeah, I think he's a nice power option. You keep him around. And then in on base percentage leagues, I mean, he's at his 370 OBP, and he's like, I don't know if I've ever seen this drastic of like a swing decision change for someone who's been in the league for this long. Like, his swing rate is dropping like 6 or 7 percentage points. He's not chasing and he's just walking a ton. I don't know if he's getting pitched around or this is just something he's working on, but yeah, you're pretty happy with him, at least in OBP leagues, but other formats have been pretty frustrating.
Yeah, it's actually kind of hilarious. He had a 302 average last year. He's got a 240 average this year. But his OBP has only dropped 11 points, which means his walk rate has increased from 11% to 17%. I was looking at the stat yesterday. I was just like, that doesn't seem right, but it is. Like, he's walking like basically 1 out of 5 at bat plate appearances, which is crazy. And yeah, the average dropping, but the OBP like basically staying the same is just so funny. It's even more like three true outcomes than how it might appear. And actually, I should mention, he hit a homer yesterday on Wednesday, so he's actually up to 20 now through mid-August. So I think getting to that 30 mark is probably very doable for him at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he's known for going on runs, so I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah. All right, moving on to pitchers. Thanks to Nick for the Another Trick in the Wall SP Roundup article referring to Hurston Waldrop, who's gotten some buzz in fantasy recently. But we're going to talk about Joey Cantillo instead. He went up against the White Sox, 5.2 innings, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 3 strikeouts. This was a streaming option. Cantillo is one of those guys who can be all over the place. His ratios aren't very good. But when you're against the White Sox, yeah, you might as well go for it. He only got 9 whiffs though, which is kind of weird for him. He's a little bit of a CSW artist. I think he's like top 5 or something like that. Really good strikeout rate numbers. But yeah, nonetheless, he actually didn't walk that many guys. The two walks is actually like kind of an improvement for him. So yeah, Cantillo's just kind of this guy who just throws a lot of strikes, gets a lot of strikeouts, but kind of his numbers are terrible everywhere else. But when you get a nice schedule, I think it's worth gambling on him. He obviously got the White Sox in this one. He now gets Atlanta tomorrow, Friday. So I guess it would be, you know, you already know how that start went by the time you listen to this. But then he gets Arizona the week after that. So basically two sort of weak offenses coming up for him. Like I said, that strikeout rate, 28%. Everything else is just awful. If he can become more consistent, which is a big if, and just basically bring down the walk rate, he could easily become another, you know, Cleveland pitching success story out of the many for him. Where do you see Cantillo's potential come next season? He's one of those guys that always has that potential, I think, every single year that he's done it, which I think maybe just dates back the last 2 seasons. But anything you like about his makeup that could kind of make him worth a flyer in next season's drafts?
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, 11 strikeouts per 9 from a lefty who's pitching for the Guardians, that's really intriguing. But the walk rate just destroys the whip. So it's really hard for me to buy into him as anything more than a streamer or, you know, like a AL-only type hold. So, yeah, that just kind of gives me pause. And it's not like this is a new problem for him. You know, last year in AAA, he threw 95 innings, 5.2 walks per 9, right? So it was even worse. So I think that he's the type of guy who he maybe just nibbles a little bit and it results in a lot of strikeouts, but it also results in a lot of walks. So I just don't have a ton of confidence in him bringing the whip down to like a palatable, range, at least as a starting pitcher, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is the trouble with him. I think ERA 4.11 this season, 3.93 FIP. So, you know, it just doesn't look great for him at all. And like you said, that those walks really do haunt for him. The 1.4 whip this season, just those are just numbers that you just can't really have on your roster for the entire season, unfortunately. Like, the potential is there, right? Just a lefty that can get a ton of strikeouts, but unfortunately it's kind of the at-bats between those strikeouts that that you don't love.
Right, and I think you can probably pick and choose your spots with them, but yeah, if you're running those kind of ratios out there every start, you're not going to be happy with the result.
Yeah.
So on going to Sunday, August 10th, Johnny Gordon, thank you for our hitter recap. It was Contreras the Roof, which was a shout out to the streaking William Contreras. And I guess the entire streaking Brewers team, you know, they can't lose right now. But I'm going to talk about another player in the Central, the Central Division, this one, the AL Central. That's Kyle Manzardo. That was a double dong day for Kyle Manzardo of Cleveland. 2-for-4 with 2 solo homers. He is up to 21 homers this year. And it's been a little bit of an up and down sophomore season for him. But, you know, he could potentially be a first base utility bat to target in drafts next year, you know, because the power is there, right? 21, he has an outside chance at a 30-homer season. And then he's been one of the best hitters in the league, like, in the past month or so. OPS, you know, right around 1.0. So really strong stretch for Manzardo. Obviously, it comes in a tough Cleveland offense, though. So counting stats might not quite be there. But is he a good first base utility ad for the stretch run?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. He's more or less supplanted Carlos Santana as the first baseman, and they've been willing to put him at DH as well, which I think is big for his playing time. He does bat right behind Jose Ramirez, so even though it is a pretty awful Cleveland lineup, he at least has one of the best batters in the game going in front of him and getting on base. So yeah, I think at least the outlook for him for the rest of the season should be good. The Guardians are always a team that just, like, does these random stretch runs at the end of the year where it's like, oh, you know, they're 5 games, they're 3 to 5 games out of the wild card, but no, all of a sudden they're, you know, competing for it. So yeah, I think this is a team where, at least for Manzardo's sake, even though the lineup's not that great, he does have guys ahead of him that do get on base where that could probably help his RBI numbers. The run numbers, that's going to be tough, but I think his RBI numbers are still going to be good enough that, yeah, as long as he continues to swing the bat like he is right now, it could definitely work out for him.
Yeah, yeah, I have some mild interest too. 36 runs scored on 21 home runs is kind of crazy to me. Like, he's plated himself 21 times, but only been plated by, you know, other guys 15 times. So that just kind of hints at the struggles that Cleveland's offense has. He's like a streamer right now for me in a 12-team Yahoo league that has OPS as the 6th category. So that, I think, raises his appeal because he's an 800 OPS guy right now. So maybe in your standard format, a little less appealing. The other tough thing with Manzardo is I think that this is kind of, it might not be his ceiling if he improves his contact skills, but his profile is pretty maxed out. He hits a ton of fly balls and he pulls a lot of fly balls too. So he has good power, but it's not because he has great raw power. It's because his swing is grooved for power. So batting average is going to be an issue with him. He hits like 50% fly balls. So him hitting 242 is honestly like, I'll take that for a guy with this profile. So I think you just got to be aware of the warts in the profile. But if you have, like, if they have a righty heavy stretch coming up and you're in need of some power, I think he's a good target.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, at least the good thing for him is that the strikeouts aren't a huge issue. 25-26% for him. Not great, but it's not to the point where it's like, oh, that's the reason why he sucks. But it is interesting that it's kind of the hitting metrics where it's all those fly balls kind of resulting in easier outs. That's tough.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the strikeout rate's not bad, but improving it is kind of his only path to hitting more home runs at this point, because it's not like he's going to hit more fly balls, right? This is kind of already on the extreme spectrum, the end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
On the pitching side, Octo Burgert was our SP roundup from Nick, which is Ryan Burgert, who is kind of jockeying to stay in the Royals rotation at this point, you know, with the return of Michael Lorenzen, Bailey Falter sent to the bullpen. I'm going to talk about another guy, though, who has some rotation questions as well. That's Eric Lauer of the Blue Jays. He was at the Dodgers in this one, so a tough matchup. He got no decision and did struggle. 3 innings, 3 earned, 6 hits, 4 walks, and 4 strikeouts, so really bad whip. 6 whiffs, 27% CSW on 71 pitches. And even though he faced a lot of righties, he wasn't really able to take control with his four-seamer cutter mix. And Shane Bieber's coming back soon for the Blue Jays, right? The big trade acquisition. I believe he's going to have one more rehab start, and then he's going to be ready to go. So the Blue Jays don't really have an obvious contender to remove from the rotation because Lauer's been so good. He's going to get one more start against the Rangers. And then if they go six-man, he'll stay in and get the Marlins, I believe. But it is kind of an open question at this point. And with Lauer having this rocky start and then maybe he has another one, even though he has an ERA right around 3, his rotation spot could be in jeopardy. So kind of obviously much different pitcher than Chase Burns, but kind of a similar situation here in terms of the uncertainty. Are we holding on and waiting to see like we are with Burns, or are we just kind of dropping off, jumping off the train because we think, you know, regression is probably coming Lauer's way anyway?
Yeah, I feel regression is coming his way. He had a great six starts, right? The stretch run basically since the start of July. He's been really, really solid. But I don't know. I mean, this season just like has been kind of a really mixed bag for him. And I'm not really inclined to trust too much in his ability, especially now that there's like the situation where he just like he could be kicked out of the rotation, right? I don't know if I'm like, oh, I immediately drop him after this Dodgers start. Maybe you see how he does against Texas. But if that start just goes poorly, I don't really see a reason to keep him on your roster.
Yeah, I think I'm mostly with you. Obviously, he's been great, right? 2.82 ERA. The WHIP has been good too, 1.06. So he's been awesome, but it's found money, right? You're thrilled with what you've gotten so far. I think as long as he's in the rotation, you start him. But, you know, if you need to cut him to make an important move or get a big streamer, you know, I would get that, especially if they go six man and then he's pitching like once a week. That's just not, you know, for someone who has been good but doesn't really have that high of a ceiling, you know, that's not really an ideal situation.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Like even if he stays on the roster, the playing time just goes down, and you're really then just, if you're just looking at one Lauer start a week, those single starts just might not be worth it for him. It's especially considering that the Blue Jays, I'm sure their schedule is not like a cakewalk for the rest of the season either. So yeah, it could pose a lot of issues if you keep him on your roster.
Yeah, the matchups would have to be pretty good for me to want him to stick around.
All right, we're going to move to Monday. Thanks to Christian Ottman for the Feeling Like a Million Bucks hitter recap article, of course referring to Byron Buxton, who I mentioned hit a homer in his first game back from the injury list. But we're not going to talk about Buck. We're going to talk about Zach Neto of the Angels. 3-for-3 with 2 homers, 3 runs, 2 RBIs, and 2 walks. Neto's been paying dividends after missing the first month of the season for all fantasy managers. He reached base all 5 times on Monday. Power the Angels to a victory over the Dodgers. They actually, I think, ended up sweeping the Dodgers, which is kind of impressive. Neto led off the game with a solo shot off Yoshinobu Yamamoto. He added another solo homer in the 6th, bringing his season total to 19. He's gotten to 23 homers and 30 steals last season. That was 155 games. He actually could be better than those numbers this year. He's got 72 runs and 21 stolen bases with the .269 average in fewer games than the .155. He's still probably got around 30 to go for the rest of the season, maybe 40, depending on, you know, how often the Angels are playing him. The one challenge, of course, with Neto is that he bats leadoff for the Angels, so he basically just has, like, no RBIs, or at least not a lot of RBI opportunities besides hitting himself in. And, yeah, unfortunately, that's just the rough thing for him. That's kind of why he's not as highly ranked of a shortstop, because he's kind of hurting in one of the major categories. But, nonetheless, extremely solid shortstop this year. How do we feel about Neto's stock coming up in 2026 drafts? This is a guy who should be drafted like a top 5 shortstop, or is there still a little bit of, well, we'll see how it does.
Yeah, I think maybe not a top 5 unless he, you know, just goes on a super strong run to end the season. But I mean, he's quietly approaching, you know, fantasy superstar status at this point. I think just because of how deep shortstop is, like the 5th shortstop off the board this year was Francisco Lindor, right? Like that's crazy, right? So he's not in that class, but I think that he is top 10 at this point for sure. Like you said, RBIs aren't great, but everything else is pretty solid. He also has a super pull-heavy profile. I was looking at his spray chart on Baseball Savant, and he probably has like 15 of his 109 hits are to the right half of the field. Like he is definitely selling out for power, and it's working for him, right? He's kind of shown really nice growth every single year in the majors. So yeah, I think he's going to go really high. I'm interested to see where the price is, because that's going to kind of dictate if I'm in. But yeah, I was thinking about this recently. Like, does he go ahead of like Corey Seager? Does he go ahead of CJ Abrams? Like, he's outperforming both of those guys, you know, at least on a per game basis this year.
Yeah, and the power is like huge for him too, right? Like, that's why you might take him over a speedster like Abrams. Even though the steals are lower, he's got better power ability, and yeah, it he can contribute at least in more categories than maybe a player like Abrams can.
Yeah, you just got to hope that he keeps running. He's not the most, in terms of success rate, last year he was 30 for 40, which is 75%, good, not great. And this year he's 21 for 30 on the basis of 70%. So that's kind of approaching the point where, you know, some teams might tell him to stop stealing if he can't be more successful. But hopefully the Angels keep letting him run. I feel like they're generally pretty loose, but I guess, you know, monitor his stolen base attempts and success down the stretch to the, you know, see if that's going to stick around next year.
Yeah. All right, moving on to the SB Roundup article. Thanks to Nick for the No More Javier Boredom SB Roundup. And we are talking about Christian Javier, who, of course, we mentioned before. He basically is coming back after a year and a half-ish of recovery. He pitched a couple games in 2024, but then went on the injured list for the next year. But yeah, now he's back. 5 innings, 2 runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 5 strikeouts. Nick kind of mentioned Javier looks like the 2022 version of himself, which is pretty solid. Velocity was steady at 93, 94 miles an hour. Sweeper was very good against righties. His changeup was a pretty good third offering as well. 60% strike rate in this start. Nick did note that the height-adjusted vertical attack angle on the fastball, it's been great in years past, 1.4 degrees, really flat, but now it's more about 1.1 degrees, which kind of is a little bit of a steeper fastball, and that 0.3 difference is pretty notable. Even though it seems small, it does kind of change the way that your fastball kind of enters the zone. So something just to note that his fastball is a little different now. It's a little bit steeper than it was back in 2022, 2023. The other metrics on the fastball besides velocity aren't really stellar. Really bad extension. I think it was only like 6 feet or something like that. But he is making it work. It looked good in the start, obviously. He now gets Baltimore twice, once in Houston this upcoming Sunday, and then Camden on Friday. I personally think you need to pick up Javier immediately. I have him in my home league. But what are your thoughts on Javier? Is he a guy that you should be going out and grabbing right now?
Yeah, I think he's worth an add. I don't think that the upside is tremendously high if this fastball shape keeps up. I think that super flat fastball paired with his slider, it's kind of the foundation that he, you know, built a lot of success on. So I don't think he has, you know, SP2, SP3 upside, but I think he's still a nice back end guy. The Orioles lineup is pretty weak right now. Better against righties, but still not great. Yeah, I think you go for him. It's nice to see that he's mixing in a sinker now to, I think, you know, counteract maybe that less than ideal fastball shape. So he's trying to diversify his repertoire a little bit. I think he's worth adding and probably starting. Just add him to the list of, you know, Astros. They perpetually have starters that you forgot existed coming back, right? They have Luis Garcia and JP France in minor league rehab right now, and they could be back soon too. So they're getting strong just in time for the playoffs. You know, they always seem to figure out a way to do it.
Man, JP France, that's one of those guys where it's like he had like a couple really nice starts and then it was just like, oh, now he's out for season.
Yeah. It's tough. You know, the Astros, they have guys come out of nowhere, right? Like Brandon Walter was pitching like an ace and then he goes down, but it doesn't matter because they have Christian Javier coming back and Spencer Arrighetti. So it's, I guess they're just great at, you know, unearthing talent. So more power to them.
Yeah. It's like, they traded Brian Gusto right over during the trade deadline. And he's like popping up in the Marlins and you're like, oh, maybe he's good. And it's like, oh, but he's not pitching for the Astros anymore. So there's like a little aspect of like, the Astros don't die, right? Like even when they have a bad start to the season, you're just like, they're going to come back. And then that bodes well for their pitchers, right? Because it just means that there's more win opportunities for those guys, even if it's someone really random, like, who was like Colton Gordon, right? Who like, just like, oh yeah, he could be something, but he's kind of also something because he plays for the Astros and they're going to just get wins. And that's one category that can be really helpful for a guy.
Yeah, I mean, when Yordan Alvarez got hurt and then Jeremy Pena, they're running out of lineup with Mauricio Dubon and like Taylor Trammell and Zach Shorten, and they're winning games anyway. It doesn't seem to matter who they have. They just win.
Yeah, it's a little bit of magic there.
Something like that. Going to Tuesday the 12th, Scott McDermott, thank you for the hitter recap. It was rinse and repeat, which is a shout out to Pete Alonso, who has taken the sole lead in the Mets. Franchise home run king. So congrats to him. He's having a hell of a season. I'm going to talk about another Pete, actually, and he is a slumping. Pete Crow Armstrong of the Cubs, obviously outfielder. He was 0 for 4 in this one, and he was 0 for 4 again yesterday. And, you know, fantasy baseball's first half MVP, right? He had a great breakout in the first half, but August has been ugly for him. 3 for 37 with a double and 14 strikeouts so far in August. Believe he was sitting today to get a day off to clear his head. And just one steal in the month. So it's been ugly. We talked about him maybe a month ago or so. And we talked about, you know, how much of this breakout do we believe? And I think that I said, I believe in the power speed. I don't believe in the batting average. But even I wasn't expecting it to tank this quickly, right? Like, I figured the batting average would consistently drop over the course of the year and kind of end up in the 260 range, but we're already there. So it could keep plummeting. Yeah, how much does this kind of give us pause about, you know, we're going to have to invest a high draft pick in PCA next year. So how much does this rough stretch, you know, make us concerned about doing that?
Yeah, obviously it's concerning in the sense that, like, it's easily his worst month, right? If you go all the way back to the All-Star break, if you just look at the second half of the season, right, which really isn't the second half, but whatever, through 22 games, a 205 average, right? So it's like basically half of July into August. He hasn't had a month as bad as this, right? His worst month this season was June, where he hit 240, but still had six homers in that month, eight stolen bases. In the second half of the season, it's just two homers and three stolen bases. How does this color? I don't know how it colors. Like, players just have bad months, right? Is he a guy who I'm saying is now like a... I think he was getting close to the first round status, right? If you just looked at the first half of the season, you're like, well, that's a guy who's going to get drafted in the first round. I think maybe he slides to the second now if this kind of continues, if he has like a 2 month slump. But the biggest thing about him is the fact that because he's so good on defense, the Cubs have to trot him out every single day. He's going to have to figure this out at the plate. And so, yes, the numbers probably look terrible, but it's also because he is playing every single day. He's trying to work his way out with some. He doesn't have the opportunity to, you know, kind of work on it maybe, you know, on the bench or just like kind of in the back. He's like literally working out at bat by at bat in the majors. So it's a little tough situation for him. I do think he's still valuable to pick up next year in drafts. Maybe he's just not a first-round talent, you know. That's probably where I'm at.
Yeah, I think you're right that he's going to be dropping out of the first, but I don't see him dropping out of the second. I still am a little hesitant. I also think it's worth monitoring where he hits in the lineup, right? Because, like, right now he's a great fantasy hitter, but in terms of, like, a real-life hitter, like, he's not that far above average just because of the walks are so low. So, you know, the Cubs have a super deep lineup, right? On a lot of teams, he'd probably be hitting, like, fifth, but he might get bumped down to, like, seventh or eighth in a lineup like this. So, I think that's worth monitoring because that's going to affect his volume big time for next year. I think maybe I'd have to get to the third round to think about taking him. And then OBP leagues, like, I'm sure he'll be heavily discounted, but he's like board. I wouldn't say he's off my board because everybody has a price, but you know the OBP is going to be bad even if he has a good season. So I think it's hard to draft a guy like that in this format. But yeah, hopefully he can still get to like a 30-40 season, and obviously it'll still be a huge win for, you know, for people who drafted him this year.
Right. You're basically getting him for the counting stats. You're not getting him for average. You know, if you're in a six category hitting league where OBP, slugging, OPS are one of the categories, it makes it a little harder to maybe invest in him because now he's not helping out in as many categories as he would be just like a standard 5x5. The power obviously is the weird thing, right? The fact that he got to 27 homers so far this year after only having 10 last year. The speed will always be there. And I think because of the nature of the team he plays on, the counting stats will generally be there as well in terms of RBIs and runs. But yeah, the power is the one thing where I'm kind of interested in how real that is. And I'm kind of with you in the sense that, like, I don't know if I'm willing to drop a second round pick on PCA when there's just a lot of good outfielders, frankly, that you could pick that maybe have a little bit more consistency than him.
Yeah, it's the type of thing where you convince yourself that you want a stable guy, and then they like go off, and then you're kicking yourself. You know, it's a tough question sometimes.
Yeah, he's a little bit of a reverse Julio if you really think about it. Like J-Rod's just been like awful, and then now he's just turning on the Jets, and I'm facing him in a fantasy matchup, and I just hate it right now because he's just hitting homers and getting steals like he's actually like a 30-30 player.
Second half Julio.
Yeah.
On the pitching side, Donovan New May was Nick's SP roundup, which was a shout out to a great outing from Dustin May. He seems to maybe be figuring some things out with the Red Sox. I'm going to be talking about a different pitcher who's been in a great groove lately, probably one of the best pitchers in the league in the last month, which is a little crazy to say, but it's Jacob Lopez of the A's. He was at home against the Rays in this one, his former organization, actually, so got the win in the revenge game. 7 scoreless innings, 4 hits, no walks, 9 strikeouts, 15 whiffs, and a 35% CSW on 96 pitches, so just a masterful performance. And the slider was really successful in this one, 8 out of 33 whiffs, and then complemented by cutter and four-seamer. 52% strikes in the fastball, 83% on the cutter, so he filled up the zone really well with the cutter. Lopez is a guy who offers a lot of deception. He's a lefty, throws from a pretty low slot with some cross-body arm action, and has a good amount of extension, over 7 feet. So it's really hard to, you know, distinguish the fastball from the cutter and the cutter from the slider. Plus, he threw a changeup 80% of the time for strikes. You know, the changeup landed in zone 80% of the time. So Lopez is just in a great, great groove right now, and the matchups are pretty good going forward. Let me just check who his next matchup is. Looks like he gets Minnesota. Twins, yeah, and then at Seattle. So, you know, Seattle's a decent offense, but good venue to pitch in. So is Jacob Lopez must-start status at this point, just given the strikeout upside that he has? He has a almost 30% K rate.
Yeah, I've definitely been holding off on picking him up, and that probably has been a mistake. I think he's been available in a couple of my leagues. And there could be some risk of like, oh, you know, like he's had this great 4-game stretch. Like, this is when the wheels fall off. But I think the fact that he's kind of doing this with like good strikeout numbers and just like good metrics, right? Like you mentioned, really good extension. It's probably, yeah, I think if he's on your waiver wire, I think you should pick him up instead of just kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. That's kind of how I've felt. Just like, I'm just kind of waiting for it to kind of the wheels to fall off for him. And they haven't for 4 starts. And like you said, those next 2 matchups sound really good to the point where I don't think it's worth worth holding back. I mean, you might as well just see how he does against Minnesota. They alternate between a terrible offense team and a really good offense team, but they also kind of suck against lefties. So this could be a really good opportunity to just see how he does in that environment. And then going to Seattle, like you said, really good park to pitch in. So even if he, you know, does give up a couple more hits, he's probably not going to be able to, he's not going to like hurt your ERA in that type of start.
Yeah. And I was going to say, maybe you just play him on the road more than at home, because A is kind of a scary park, but he's actually been better at home than on the road. So yeah. I guess he's pretty comfortable pitching there. He does allow a lot of contact in the air, but it's a lot of weak contact. So clearly, you know, there's some deception to him. I was also hesitant to buy in just because he wasn't really a prospect and also hadn't had really any major league success before this year. So I understand the trepidation for sure, and I don't have him anywhere, but I think at this point, you know, if he's out there, I think that it is worth grabbing and just let him ride while he's on this roll.
Yeah. I'll just say, as a suffering fan, that Minnesota start's probably going to go well for him.
They're giving Tarek Skubal a good game right
they
now.
They are. Yeah. But I'm not going to put too much stock into that.
Can't blame me.
All right, moving on to Wednesday. Jacob Marcy is our player that we're talking about, thanks to Kyle Stanzel for the Marcy's Playground hitter recap article. Marcy's been really good. He made his MLB debut a couple weeks ago. Kind of a reminder, he came to the Marlins in the Luis Arraez trade. He was incredible on Wednesday, going 4-for-5 with 2 homers, 7 RBI, and his 6th stolen base of the season. He's been really, really solid in all categories. The slash line is kind of crazy right now. 436, 542, 872. Obviously, those numbers are not sustainable, but they are very fun. It's a 13-game sample size for him. I guess the weird thing is that he hasn't shown like that much power in the minors, but this season he's really come alive with 17 homers across AAA and the majors. The big thing with Marcy has always been his speed. He's had 53 total stolen bases this year between AAA and the majors. So obviously that's kind of been a big thing for him is that speed, and it feels like the Marlins just have a ton of speedsters. So, you know, here's another one to add to the list. We've already kind of talked about how the Marlins are kind of a sneaky good offense team. And even though, you know, kind of the roster as a whole, you look at it, it's not that great, but they do still have like 3 to 4 really decent players. So that all being said, how shallow of a league are you willing to roster Marcy in at this point?
Yeah, I think it's must roster pretty much all formats, honestly, just because of the upside with the speed. the batting average is a complete mirage, right? Like his some of his projections have him to hit less than half as high of an average as he has right now, right? He's hitting 436, and I see 210 on 208 on projection systems, right? So that's kind of more consistent with what we've seen in the minors. But like you said, the power took a little bit of a step forward this year in the minors, and the steals have always been there, right? He was 47 for 60 in the minors in 98 games. So he's going to run, and I think the Marlins, you know, they let their guys run. So I think just based on that, you go out and grab him and, you know, kind of figure it out later if he starts to struggle a little bit. Like, this kind of breakout is more believable to me than like warming Bernabéu, right? Who had like a great five games or whatever and has cooled off tremendously since. So yeah, he's just locked in at the plate right now. Like his chase rate's 11%, which is the lowest in the league, basically. Obviously small sample, but he has always had great walk rates. So it seems like he's making the most of his offensive profile by just not chasing a lot and getting on base and doing a lot of damage. So Pretty cool breakout. I got outbid on him in my NFBC league, which I was pretty bummed. I the weekend he got called up, I bid on him, but somebody was really aggressive and, you know, clearly it's working out. So yeah, he's on fire.
Yeah, you look at these numbers, like a 19% walk rate, and you're like, that's crazy. And then it's like, oh, that's right. He's had 48 at bats and he's walked 9 times. So it's like,
yeah,
it's not like insane numbers, but it's all, you know, relative, small sample size. But nonetheless, it is really impressive that he doesn't strike out a lot. And that's actually been a kind of consistent thing for him through the minors, kind of hovering around 20% strikeout rates throughout the minors. Walk rates has been just as good, 15 to 18% throughout the minors. So, yeah, even though this average probably isn't believable, I think the plate skills are real, where, like, he's probably a really good OBP league sort of guy with just how his eye is. And like you mentioned, he's just not chasing stuff. So, yeah, in a 5x5, I think he's fun to have, but yeah, I would not expect that good of an average to continue, obviously.
No, but when someone goes, like, you know, this hot for a 2-week stretch, I think you just add him first and ask questions later for sure.
Yeah. All right, moving on to pitchers. Mr. Green with the flamethrower, SB Roundup article from Nick, and we are talking about Hunter Green. Like we mentioned, 6 innings, no earned runs, 3 hits, no walks, and 6 strikeouts in his start on Wednesday. Yeah, Green's been hurt for a bunch of the season, but he came back, and he came back with a vengeance. The fastball was really good, 99 miles an hour, 17 to 18 inches of vert, IVB there. It was kind of earlier in the season, it dropped a little bit, I think kind of hovering around when he was injured. So it's nice to see that back up at a really elite level. Looking kind of steep as well, 1.2 degrees of height adjusted vertical attack angle. Actually, I should say that's a little flat-ish, but it kind of just helps with the heater, making it look like it's got a little bit more rising action. And the sliders, solid again, got a bunch of strikes, got 9 whiffs specifically in this start, 66% strike rate. With Hunter, obviously the big thing for him is just injury. But assuming all goes well, he stays healthy throughout the rest of the season, is Green basically a lock to be a top 20 guy in your rankings, or is there still some wait and see with him?
Yeah, no, I feel confident about top 20 for sure. I mean, I think if he strings a couple more starts together, you could even start talking about top 10 just because of the strikeout upside, right? Nick has him at 22nd right now, but that's just because he's a little cautious when guys are first returning from injury. So I would expect him to be inside the top 20 next week. Yeah, it's an overpowering arsenal. It's a shame he hasn't quite put together a full season in the majors yet, right? Last year was his highest volume season at 26 starts and 150 and a third. So you do have to, I think, you know, maybe in drafts and stuff, discount him a little bit just because I wouldn't say he's injury prone, but it's just hard to believe a guy can make 30 starts in a year until you see him do it. So it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, where he gets drafted next year, because clearly the last 2 years we've seen that the per inning quality is there. It's just a question of durability. And he's a big, you know, big, strong guy. So you'd hope that the frame would hold up, but it hasn't so far, unfortunately. But yeah, this year specifically, he's an ace as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Hunter's been really impressive. Just looking at some of his season numbers so far, right? He's made 12 starts this year. Last year he made 26. I would say if he stays healthy, he should probably get to around the 20 start mark. But I mean, it's kind of important to note he hasn't thrown more than 150 innings in a season. That was last year, right? So like, even let's assume just like he only gets on the IL for like one stint, right, you're still missing about 50 innings of production from him, like assuming he could go to 200, which is just kind of doesn't happen for pitchers anymore. But I think if he does, you know, has the potential to go 140, 150, which are things you just can't project. But, you know, if you want to say like that's what you're going to get out of Hunter Green, yeah, I think he's still a very valuable pickup in drafts next season. If you're just like, yeah, he's going to start like 25 times and we're going to be okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, he was going like pick 100 this year. I think the days of him being a triple digit pick might be done, right? Like Jacob DeGrom was going pick 50 to 60 or so, maybe even earlier in some high stakes drafts. Like, I think that, you know, obviously on a per inning basis, he's not DeGrom, but he has, you know, some injury questions and obviously the tantalizing arsenal. So I kind of see some parallels there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that is going to wrap it up for the player performances. And now we're going to move on to streamers. So yeah, Patrick, let's get a little bit of a recap of some of the streaming options from the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a challenge lately with the streamers. 2 weeks ago, just finishing the update on those guys. It was 3 2-start guys, Mike Burrows, Justin Verlander, Davis Martin. Verlander had a good first start, and Burrows and Martin were both bad. We talked about that last week. And then the second start for all three was rough, to differing degrees, but they all went 5 innings with 3 to 5 earned with no win. So tough week of streamers. Hoping to bounce back. You know, sometimes the summer months can be tough with the ball flying. So far this week, on the recap, Logan Allen, first start. No decision, 5 innings, 2 earned, 5 strikeouts, 1.6 whip. So, you know, kind of a mediocre stream. Nestor Cortez got pulled, 1 out short of a win, 4 2/3, 1 earned, 6 strikeouts, 1.50 whip. Jameson Taillon, who was a little bit speculative, he did not go like we talked about. He got a final rehab start and might get 2 starts next week. And then Michael McGreevy, he got a no decision because Jojo Romero blew the save against the Rockies. He had a kind of a baseline quality start, 6 innings, 3 earned, 2 strikeouts, 1.17 whip. That's kind of what you expect from him. He's not a super high upside guy. So this week, no great 2-start options that I could find. It seems like a super light week. I know some teams only have like 5 games, so just going to throw out a bunch of 1-start guys. Some of them are kind of on the border for streamers in terms of rostership, but just going to mention them. Zebby Matthews of the Twins, 19% on Yahoo, but way higher on CBS at 58%. He gets a road start against the White Sox. A little bit of ratio risk, and the White Sox offense isn't a pushover right now, but super high strikeout upside. Going back to Nestor Cortez again, 22% Yahoo, 54% CBS. He gets 2 home starts, Giants and Dodgers. I think, you know, if you can avoid the Dodgers start and just do the Giants, go for it. But if you have to take both, I think that's okay. He's best in a wins league just because, you know, he got pulled after 4 2/3 his last start, right? So he's not quite a quality starts guy right now. And then another perennial streamer, Jose Quintana. Higher rostership, though, 39% Yahoo, 53% CBS. He gets a home start against the Giants and is a good ERA option. Shane Smith, White Sox, 10% CBS, 26% Yahoo. He's looked good in his last couple starts since coming off the IL. He gets 1 start at Atlanta, so kind of a middle-of-the-pack option. Not a great quality starts guy because he's on a little bit of an innings cap, so more of a ratios play. And then lastly, Eduardo Rodriguez of the Diamondbacks, 15% Yahoo, 37% CBS. The ratios have been ugly this year, and, you know, ERA and WHIP both been pretty bad, but good matchup. He gets Cleveland, so they're one of the weakest offenses in the league, so I think you can take the shot with that one.
Yeah, I'll just say one thing for Zebby. The command has been a lot better as of recent. He has not been walking guys a lot, which is helping kind of bring down the ratios a little bit, because even though he's still kind of giving up, you know, at least a home or a game, I think, or something like that. And at least isn't coming with extra damage because there aren't like extra base runners, or, you know, kind of guys that he gave free passes to. So, yeah, he's still a really good source of strikeouts. The ratios are always going to be kind of risky with him right now, just with the lack of command in general. But because he's kind of shown some improvement in that his past couple starts, it does feel like a little bit of a safer play, especially against a team like the White Sox, too. Like, that's just a great matchup for him.
Yeah, I think Zebby's going to do better down the stretch, but if he doesn't put it all together, like, that's okay with me, because, like, I'm just going to draft him everywhere next year. Like, I really do believe in him. I have him and Chase Burns in the same league, and, like, they're both so good, and the ratios have just been bad. It's like, if only I played in, like, a FIP league, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah. These
guys really, like, next year I would believe so much in them having way better ratio seasons than they've had, but – you know, you take what you get, right? It's sometimes, you know, fantasy and baseball is a cruel game.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, that is going to wrap it up for this week's podcast. Again, you can find us on This Week PL on Twitter. Send us your comments and questions at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at thejohnkuh and Patrick at pfitzgerald_99. Again, if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitchless podcast feed on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you listen to your podcast, and leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcherless Pro. By doing so, you can join us into the Pitcherless Discord and get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Patrick, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.